You know, I think you just have to, if you decide you want to do something like this, just recognize it's going to be hard and it's important and it's meaningful, especially if you want to be in the civil rights or social justice type field. It's worth it.
Everybody, welcome to another episode of Under Oath, a podcast brought to you by the organization Women Pursuing Law. I'm Hani Siddiqui, WPL's president.
And I'm Zara Kabir, WPL's vice president. Under Oath will aim to shed light on different career paths within law, give you the chance to hear from noted speakers, and show the industry from the POV of a woman.
Under Oath will also serve as a platform dedicated to empowering women and non-binary conforming individuals in the law industry. So if that aligns with your ideas, be sure to subscribe to our podcast.
Without further ado, let's get right into this episode.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Under Oath. I'm Kavya, and I will be your host for today. Today, we have a very special guest with us, Sophia Hollid, who is a legal fellow that works in the Criminal Defense Division at the Constitutional Law Center for Muslims in America. Sophia, would you like to briefly introduce yourself?
Yeah, sure. So I'm the Federal Criminal Defense Fellow at CLCMA. I am American, did some college here, went to law school abroad, but basically we do federal criminal cases. We do federal civil cases. All our cases are federal. They all involve constitutional issues, oftentimes involving Muslim citizens, but it's a lot of like freedom of religion, government overreach, things like that.
That sounds very interesting. And I'm so happy that you're here with us today. And I'm really excited to get into all of that. Let's just get right into the legal fellow work that you're doing at the CLCMA. Could you tell us about how your day-to-day life is as a legal fellow and how has your experience been so far?
I love it, right? The work is work that I wanted to do since I was really young. I was in like middle school at the time the Iraq War started and the sort of war on terror in the United States was ramping up. And there was a lot of fear in the Muslim community. We started seeing these like FBI entrapment type schemes and people were reading a lot about this and there was a lot of fear. Everyone started thinking that all the people at the mosque were informants. And that was, those were my formative years was when that was happening. And I always thought I would love to be, you know, a lawyer. Initially I was supposed to be a doctor, right? Daisy was supposed to be a doctor, decided, actually, Dad, there are some important things going on. I think I might have to be a lawyer and maybe one day I'll be able to shine a light on that stuff. And the kind of law that our criminal department focuses on is like national security, terrorism type cases, which is really niche. You know, normally in criminal defense, you would maybe start out at like state level offenses, and then work your way up to like felonies and then more specialized crimes. This is like very specialized, very niche. And you normally would end up there at the end of a career. So I'm really lucky that as a fellow, I'm getting to do this kind of like at the beginning, you know, and I'm seeing these really interesting cases, all of our, you know, and we're seeing behind the scenes. So in criminal cases, you get all the discovery, right? Which is like the worst part of my life, but also the most interesting because discovery is, you know, you get thousands and thousands of pages of here's the evidence. This is all the stuff from the investigation. Now you got to like make your case out of it. So a big part of my job is reviewing the discovery, organizing it, you know, cataloging it, and then using that to research and draft motions. So there's a lot of like, my time is basically pretty evenly split between managing discovery and researching and writing motions based on that discovery. And now we also have some trials coming up. So there's a lot of like trial prep. It's fascinating for me. This is my dream niche area. If I could just stay doing this work forever, I would love that. And that's kind of an interesting thing at these sorts of organizations like ACLU, CARE, you know, these like big ones. If you do a fellowship there, you can go in and immediately start in your specific niche area of interest instead of like working up there over a course of however long it may take. I don't know if I may have to go back. I'm in an interesting place. I'm starting out in this niche area doing these high level federal felonies, and we'll be doing trials. And then after that, I may be taking a step back and starting with like lower level federal felonies and stuff for a little bit, and then coming back to this.
And with your work at the CLCMA, you've been working for over 2 years, I believe.
Yeah.
With them. And so you worked in a variety of different cases like you were talking about. So is there one case that sticks out in particular that has just stuck with you and is has inspired you or impacted you till today?
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of ours are kind of long and ongoing, and obviously we can't talk about a lot of the details of those, but there is one which is, it's been in the appeals process, and our appellate department actually just filed a Supreme Court petition on that. And it was from the criminal department. So I got to help with that, and it's been an ongoing case since I started. And that's the case of Dr. Rafiq Sabir. And if you go through and you read what happened to him, this man was basically, he was an African-American convert to Islam. But because he had changed his name to Rafiq Sabir, and he had gone and worked in, for a couple of months, he had worked in Saudi Arabia, but in like the expat compound at a hospital. He was a doctor. So when you're in an expat compound over there, you're just around other Americans and other Western people. You only speak English. And he was there for a few months. He came back here and he was involved in this FBI entrapment scheme. And they had an agent. They had an agent come and tell him, like, just talking about random things. And the agent kept switching into Arabic. And he kept telling him, I don't understand Arabic. I don't get that. And the agent would then switch back to English. But like when Muslims are talking to each other, there are some times where you just will say like a prayer. Like someone will say, okay, just repeat this prayer after me. Usually when you're parting or something. The agent at the end switches back into Arabic. And instead of saying a prayer or something, he basically swears an oath of allegiance to ISIS or to Al-Qaeda. And they get him on that one statement. Though there's a whole bunch of other people involved. Nothing ever happens. There's no actual crime that's committed. There's no conspiracy. There's nothing like this. And the judge and the jury, everybody buys it because they think he's a Muslim. He worked in Saudi Arabia. He has this brown sounding name. I don't believe that he doesn't speak or understand Arabic. It was so many layers of like racial, cultural ignorance, like, you know, a lot of these assumptions. His sentence was like his sentence was increased because the judge was so furious at him after he was convicted that she gave him a longer sentence because she said he perjured himself because he wouldn't admit that he knew Arabic.
Oh my gosh, that is so upsetting. Oh,
yeah, he was a Columbia educated physician, like 25 years in prison. He's been in for, I think, 15 now.
Oh my goodness, I can't even imagine that. That is awful.
Terrible case. We just filed the Supreme Court petition on that. We have a new appellate attorney who does, like, she's amazing. And so we're really proud of the petition we just filed. We'll see what happens.
And with cases like that, does that make you want to work harder? What does that fuel for you when you see things like that happening?
It highlighted really how important it is that we have centers like this that are dedicated, because the system isn't evil, right? The judge is not like a bad person. The prosecutors weren't like bad, evil people, right? The system failed him. The system has failed him for 15 years. He's done multiple appeals. He's been back and forth. He's done everything you can, and no one's gotten it. Still to this day, nobody gets it. And that's a problem with the system, right? But a lot of the things that like we highlight in our brief are things that are bringing forward. Like, by the way, I know his name's Rafiq Sabir, but actually he was born Rene Wright. He's African-American. He grew up like poor in New York City. This isn't somebody that you're like, oh yeah, really? Dr. Rafiq Sabir, probably Desi or Arab, doesn't speak and understand Arabic. I don't buy it. I mean, there's a lot they missed, right? Or like the words that were said. When this Lebanese man with this strong accent says, you know, is saying a string of Arabic words that he doesn't stand, and he pronounces Al-Qaeda as Qaeda, And there's actually a more common religious word, which is akida, and that just means faith or creed. If you hear that, you might think, oh, he's talking about akida. You would never assume, a Muslim would never assume that another Muslim is talking to them about Al-Qaeda. I would never think that, you know? So it's there's a lot they missed. I think there's a big opportunity for education. So I think that's why it's important you have these kind of centers dedicated to the issues, because there are things that they can see and experience they have that the rest of the system doesn't have.
Transitioning a little bit from our present discussion, we talked a little bit about cultural biases that we have in place right now. With the legal field having a lot of mostly white males, and with you being a Muslim woman, have you faced any obstacles in your career that may have impacted your cases or that have impacted you personally?
You know, it's difficult to say. I will say, you know, there aren't a lot of Muslim women in law, but especially in like criminal defense. You know, the few that are there, they are in like these groundbreaking type roles. Like there was a woman that was in this position before me, and she's now a federal public defender in San Diego, and she wears hijab, and I think she was the first hijabi federal public defender in the country. So, I mean, exciting for her, but also that's difficult. You know, it's difficult, and it's difficult to navigate sometimes the spaces. I remember being like in law school, or like my first couple of years out of law school, and trying to find my place in the culture. I used to wear hijab. I wore hijab for a long time, but I did find that it kind of put me separate and apart from people. If the networking event is a big sort of drinking event, you know, it's a little odd that I'm there with my hijab and I'm not drinking. Is this weird? I'm like, it's a little weird for me, but it also seems weird for everybody else. And, you know, and the funny thing is when I stopped wearing hijab, I noticed that kind of went away, but things didn't change for me. It's not like I started drinking, still don't drink, but seemed to have a lesser impact on people. You know, I think you just have to, if you decide you want to do something like this, just recognize it's going to be hard and it's important and it's meaningful, especially if you want to be in the civil rights or social justice type field. It's worth it, you know, to keep going, and you'll find people that will want to help you. You'll also encounter, you know, you might encounter some ignorance, you will encounter difficulties, and you have to kind of power through it, because the experience that they have with you might make it easier for the person behind you. You know, I've definitely seen a lot of that as well, of people that have dealt with someone before me now being more aware of issues that I might face. Like, I might need somewhere to pray, and I didn't have to bring it up because a person before me did.
Jumping into our last few questions, I do want to talk about some ways law and pre-law students can get involved with the criminal defense field. Are there internship opportunities for pre-law students at CLCMA, or are there opportunities that you might recommend for pre-law students?
So yeah, in the summer, I mean, last summer with COVID, it really sucked because we couldn't have our interns come in. But usually we have summer interns that are law students. So I would highly encourage someone's interested in this work to apply for our summer internships. But you know, in any of these kinds of organizations, the main thing I would stress for for your career going forward, if you're looking for an internship, is find out like, what are you going to be able to do, right? Because you want to have some like actual practical experience, and that might mean looking a little wider than you may think. So like, you know, a big name in the area, an internship there might sound great, but on paper, if all you did was like research problems in Honduras and write a little like Honduras research paper, maybe that's not as helpful. But my younger sister, she's pre-law, and she did an internship at the federal public defender in their like investigation team, which actually that's like a critical, like the first few years as a criminal defense attorney, you're dealing a lot with discovery, trying to learn of like the different angles a case can take. And in that department, because this is federal public defender, these are federal felony cases, high level, great, like really great attorneys that work. They're great investigators. They handle cases well. They have a process. They have high volume. And interning in that department, she got a lot of hands-on training. She was given like, here's a batch of evidence, you know, watch all this, log it, summarize it. And then you're going to be in the meetings with the attorneys and the investigators, and we're going to talk strategy. That's a lot more than you might get to do in some other internships. So I think thinking about where people are doing the kind of work you want to do, you know, if you want to do criminal defense, think about the organizations that are doing criminal defense work, and then think wider. Don't think I only want to go to this top organization and get their top internship, because maybe doing the state public defender in another office, you know, might have more relevant experience. I'm trying to think what else I would recommend for criminal defense specifically. Public defender's offices are great. Organizations, you know, criminal defense, it's a lot of litigation. So a lot of these civil rights organizations, they don't do a lot of that. We do. We're like all litigation. So we're great for that. But keep that in mind, right? If you want to go and do criminal defense and that's pure litigation, maybe don't go somewhere that's just all policy. Might not be as relevant.
One of the things I like to ask all of our guests are, what are your future career goals in the legal industry? Where do you want to go?
I need broad trial experience. So I want to go and do a lot of criminal federal trials. That's the kind of thing you have to learn by doing, right? You learn these things. We get to work with some amazing attorneys in our organization, and they just have, it's like a sixth sense they have of like, what's the right kind of juror for this case? And I would think, oh, let's get a lot of like young minorities, but they might be like, no, let's get a bunch of old white guys. You're like, what? Why are we doing that? But then they have great reasons. And you're like, I didn't think of that. I also haven't been to any trials, so I trust you. But that's the kind of thing you want to do a lot of trials. I want to learn, how do judges react to things? How do juries react to things? What arguments work? You know, get into a flow, figure out my style. So for me, my immediate goals are, I would like to stay here and do this kind of work longer, you know, and I want to help grow our organization, and I just love the work that our organization does. So I'd like to stay here for a little bit and help develop that. And then at some point I need to go and do a ton of federal trials. So that's the immediate goal. And then once I've done a lot of federal trials, then I want to work my way back into like the niche specialized areas of the cases that are like meaningful, impact, like that are important to me. And then I'll also be really good at it. It won't just be fun for me. I'll also be adding value to the case. So I think that's important, right? It's not just like what you want to do and what you think is interesting or the sexy cases. You also want to be the best at it. We have some attorneys in our organization that are just brilliant. And you look at just hearing how they think sometimes, you realize it takes a lot of experience and effort. You have to build that up, and then you can be really good. So I want to be really good, and then I want to come back and do the really important cases.
That wraps up our third episode with our legal fellow, Sophia. I want to thank her for taking the time out of her schedule to speak to us about her work as a legal fellow, as well as the quality, important work that she's doing with the CLCMA. I think it was incredibly inspiring, so I thank you so much for taking that time.
Thank you, Kavya, for reaching out to me. And you know, it was really great talking to you guys. I love talking to pre-law students and people that are about to come into this area. My little sister hates talking to me about it. So when I talk to other people that care about what I have to say, I love it. You can always reach out to me if you guys have other questions or anything.
As always, this is Under Oath, and I rest my case.
Thank you for tuning in today to our bi-weekly episodes. My name is Maisha Scheif, and I'm the production chair for WPL. This episode was edited by Kara Curtis and hosted by Kavya Venugopalan. If you enjoyed this episode, I would appreciate it if you left a short review on whatever platform you're listening on. Also, follow us on Instagram at UTDWPL and LinkedIn at UTD Woman Pursuing Law. Goodbye and stay safe.